Good afternoon. Calling State Affairs to order at 3:02 p.m. Thursday, March 4th, 2021, in the Max Gruenberg Room of the Alaska Capitol. Present, we have Representative Vance, Representative Tarr, Representative Kaufman, Representative Story, and Representative Klayman, giving us 6 members present and a quorum to conduct business. Many thanks to Tom with the LIO and Sophia with House Records for facilitating today's meeting. And we have 2 items on today's agenda. Before we get there, a couple of housekeeping notes to touch on. And let the record reflect, Representative Eastman joined us at 3:03, giving us a full suite of membership. Couple of items of housekeeping. The first is that, especially with reduce committee time and the legislature working double time with finance subcommittees, we're exploring a Saturday hearing, so the Saturday after next, that would be March 13th, at 1 p.m. to consider legislation. So that will be noticed when committee schedules go out here later today. But feel free to let me know if that doesn't work with your schedule or there's something that might conflict. Second item of housekeeping is that per the memo from the Rules Committee yesterday about committee staff and committee hearings, the policy I'd like to put forward is that just the committee aide and then staff who are helping present legislation be present in the room, and that we sort of make that the standard rule for state affairs. But if for any reason there's an exception or a situation that you would like to flag as maybe sort of going a different direction for a particular reason, please let me know and we can discuss it on a case-by-case basis. And we'll send that out in writing by email here later today. So those are the 2 items of housekeeping. The 2 pieces of legislation on the agenda, House Bill 18 relating to National Board Certification, a second hearing, and then House Bill 62, technically a second hearing, but in reality a first hearing, second time it's been scheduled, from Representative Klayman. So with that, we will start with House Bill 18, and we were just getting into invited testimony when we ran out of time on Tuesday. So online, we have Norm Wooten, who's available for questions. And as you all will recall, Mr. Wooten had just finished his invited testimony when we adjourned. So the 2 invited testifiers we'll hear today are Lisa Parody from the Alaska Superintendents Association and Tom Claymeyer from National Education Association of Alaska. So with that, we will proceed with Ms. Parody. Ms. Parody, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and feel free to present your testimony on House Bill 18.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators and the Alaska Superintendents Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of HB 18. The Alaska Superintendents Association offers its support of this bill. We believe supporting National Board Certification for public school teachers is important. We believe every Alaska student deserves a qualified, effective teacher, and promoting National Board Certification is an excellent pathway to achieving this goal. The Alaska Council of School Administrators joint position statements, of which each of you have received a hard copy, they are our collective priorities of our members, including superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and all of the school administrators working hard to serve our students across Alaska. And they identified that recruiting, retaining, and preparing qualified educators is a top priority for supporting our schools. Research demonstrates that teacher quality is the most effective school-based factor in student achievement. And National Board Certification promotes teacher quality by encouraging teachers to reach the highest available benchmarks in their field. And I think I shared that as of 2019, Alaska ranks 25th in the nation with a 2.57% of our Alaska teachers recognized with National Board Certification. ACSA believes a goal of 4% is an ambitious goal to encourage teachers to pursue certification, but a good goal. It costs $1,900 plus a $75 registration fee, and it typically takes 3 years to complete. It is administered by the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, which is also a nonprofit organization, and I think my colleague Wooten mentioned that yesterday. The mission of their national board is to advance the quality of teaching and learning by maintaining high and rigorous standards for what accomplished teachers should know and be able to do, and by providing a national voluntary system certifying teachers who meet these standards. Assessment, there's an assessment that validly and reliably identifies when a teacher meets those standards. The National Board certification process is designed to collect the standards-based evidence of accomplished practice. Candidates for National Board certification must complete four components. Computer-based assessment, component one is content knowledge in 25 certificate areas. There's portfolio entries, component two, differentiation and instruction, component three, teaching practice and learning environment, component four, effective and reflective practitioner. The four components can be submitted in any order, and the candidates can complete from one to four components a year, but they must submit all four components within the first 3 years of their candidacy. While it is possible to complete the process in as little as of a year, that typically doesn't happen, and there is a limited five-year window to achieve certification. I won't go on with regard to the specifics around each of those component pieces, but I have an outline of that that I'd be happy to share with the committee. So just by a point of comparison, Alaska has, I think, around 202 National Board certified teachers, and there are 23 Alaska candidates right now. And in Hawaii, by way of example, they have 728 that have achieved this and 239 current candidates. Washington State, our neighbors, have 11,521 teachers who have achieved this and approximately 1,600 candidates. And I share those because there's been different levels of incentive to support teachers to achieve this. So, for example, this is just a quick summary of what they did in Washington. In the fall of 1998, the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and this was through a grant process, as I understand it, but they offered to fund 50% of the application fees for approximately 35 to 40 candidates per year. The 1999 legislative session allocated $327,000 for 15% salary increases for nationally board certified teachers over the next 2 years. The funding allotment made it necessary for the Department of Ed to develop a competitive process to determine eligibility for the 45 teachers who would receive this 15% increase. Currently, teachers achieving certification in Washington receive a salary enhancement of $3,500 per year. National Board certification also fulfills the initial certification requirements for a Washington State professional level certificate. Now, I don't claim to be an expert by any means on what's happening in Washington, but I share that by way of example that states are doing creative things to incent National Board certification. And we've seen that it doesn't just help the teachers who complete the certification. In many cases, these teachers are recognized as leaders and frequently take on enhanced leadership roles. This is especially important for developing new teachers, receiving mentorship from an experienced teacher, especially one with National Board certification can improve new teacher quality and retention. So in closing, increasing the share of Alaska teachers with National Board certification is an important step, along with comprehensively addressing teacher recruitment and retention in Alaska to improve Alaska schools for all students. We are proud to support this policy and the goal of providing an effective teacher for all students. I think that ASA has also written a letter of support that you should have. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Parody. Any questions from the committee? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Could you just briefly walk us through, once you have the board certification, how you would go about maintaining that as a teacher? What costs of time or money would be involved to the teacher or the district or someone else?
To this chair, Representative Eastman, I do not believe that there is additional cost to the individual once the certification is obtained. But I suspect that my colleague, Tom Claymire, will have that answer. And if he doesn't, I will get that answer and get it back to you.
That would be great. Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Kreiss Tompkins. Through the chair, Dr. Parody, thank you for your testimony today, and thank you for giving an example about what happens in other states to incentivize teachers getting this certification. I think what also is important to be aware of is it's the potential of it just being limited to teachers who have an adequate income to be able to afford the certification fees and maybe flexibility in time, I think would impact who would get the certification. And I think it's important for us to think about that, because I know equity is something that we all need to be aware of. And when we're doing something, and I appreciate the plaque in the bill and the having that up in front of the main office to show what teachers are nationally board certified. But in one way, if you can't afford to ever have your name on the plaque because you can't afford the fees, you know, you always hope that there's other ways to recognize staff. But sometimes I think there's barriers to something that we look at as, you know, a prestigious thing to have. And this, I wanted to bring up, I appreciated what you said about Washington State giving an incentive for teachers who have that. And I had spoken to a legislator in Washington, D.C., and they had said they were hoping, if they had to do it over again, they would have given the monetary incentive to teachers who were would be willing to work in high poverty areas, because they found that a lot of teachers got the certification and ended up, they were pleased they had it, but they weren't as apt. They just were shortage of teachers in high poverty schools, and they would try to incentivize that. So my long question here, and just sharing some of that information, is has your group ever thought about setting up a scholarship fund for teachers for this national board certification, or any other ways, partnerships to help there be an incentive for teachers who need help with the funds to do this?
Through the chair, Representative Story, I'm not sure the it's an excellent question, and I'm not sure the committee will believe that we did not plan this in advance. But in fact, one of the organizations that is under the umbrella association of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, as you know, is the Alaska Staff Development Network, or more commonly known as ASDN. And they are the largest provider of professional development for educators in Alaska outside of individual school districts. And one of the things that we do is partner with school districts on different grant projects focused on increasing student achievement. So in the last year, I really am proud to say that our ASDN is partnering in what's called the Increasing Performance and Retention in Alaska's Rural Schools, and is working closely with Alaska Gateway School District, Nanana School District, the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, and the Yukon Koyukuk School District to increase the number of nationally board certified teachers by supporting their tuition and doing collaboration and motivation processes through monthly meetings and a cohort to support each other to get through it, pooling of questions, getting other National Board Certified candidates to talk with them and encourage them. And, you know, these districts are each, as I understand it, going to have at least five educators pursuing it. And and working, then we'll be working to support them through this process. And our idea here is to pilot this to see if it's, you know, if we can make this happen, increase our numbers across Alaska, and then hopefully replicate that in other parts of the state. So it's not a, we're not doing scholarship process, but we are absolutely engaged in trying to support additional teachers to achieve this very rigorous certification.
And I might ask when Mr. Claymire presents this testimony, if there's anything sort of on the NEA radar screen to that end, especially given that NEA is, of course, the Professional Association of Teachers. Yeah. But that said, any further questions for Dr. Parody from the committee? Okay, thank you very much for the testimony. And we'll move on to Mr. Tom Claymire of NEA Alaska. Mr. Claymire, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and feel free to present your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Tom Claymire, for the record. I am the NEA Alaska president. If you guys can hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Great. Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins, for introducing House Bill 18 and jump-starting this conversation about excellent educators. And I use that term jump-starting on purpose that in answer to the question earlier, that is what we call our program to help prepare and support teachers who are engaging in or want to engage in the process to become National Board Certified. And I'll talk about it a little bit in my testimony. But, yeah, so thanks for jump-starting this conversation with this bill. Thanks to the committee for hearing it and inviting me to speak on behalf of our members to support the promotion of the National Board Certification process for teachers. For those of you whom I haven't met, I'll briefly introduce myself. I've been in this position about 8 months now, but this is my first legislative session, so you may not know who I am. I came to Alaska in 1989, courtesy of the United States Air Force, and got out and I'll make it short, went to UAA and became a teacher. I've been doing that now for 25 years. This is my 25th year as an educator in Anchorage. Of course, now, as I said, I'm serving as the NEA Alaska president. High school social studies is my gig. So if you're not familiar with National Board Certified, it is an advanced certification that goes beyond, pretty far beyond, actually, Alaska licensure, and is considered by educators as the true mark of excellence. It's recognized as the teaching professional's highest credential. There's sort of a comparison there so that you can understand it better, kind of like being an accountant versus a CPA, right, going through that type of rigor. It's not an exact comparison, but it kind of provides an example there that you might be more familiar with. It's a really an intensive, exhaustive, really a methodical and a challenging process to go through. I've heard several educator friends describe it as one of the most difficult things that they've ever done, even more so than earning their master's degree. And one of the key characteristics of the process is the intense scrutiny that educators place on their own pedagogy. There's a lot of self-analysis, meticulously analyzing their own work in order to improve their classroom practices. And I'd like to suggest that this bill and promoting National Board certification for teachers actually could go a long way in addressing two difficulties that we have in Alaska's professional education system. The first is student achievement. It's been repeatedly demonstrated that student outcomes of NBC or National Board Certified teachers are greater with than those with just state licensure across the nation. In 2017, there was a study in Mississippi that showed that students of National Board Certified teachers, their students were more likely to score proficient on key literacy assessments than their peers, specifically in kindergarten and third grade. In kindergarten, they showed that the students of National Board Certified teachers outscored those of other teachers in terms of being 31% more of them were more likely to receive a proficient score on that kindergarten readiness assessment. And in third grade, That's one of the hallmark areas where we are talking about on the reading bills, right, that we should make sure that all kids are proficient by third grade. Students of National Board Certified Teachers are 11% more likely to receive a proficient score on the MAP test of language arts. In Washington State, there was a multi-year study done that suggested that students of National Board Certified Teachers learned the equivalent of an additional 1.5 months worth of learning in the school year than students from other teachers. In another study by Harvard University Strategic Data Project, showed this the same kind of results in Los Angeles County Unified School District. And they showed 2 additional months worth of math instruction learning and 1 additional month of English language arts in the same academic year. So pretty incredible. And then the second has already been alluded to as well, the attraction and retention crisis in Alaska for educators. According to our own Institute of Social and Economic Research, teacher turnover can be up to 20 or 30%. And there are spike years where it's even higher in many of our rural districts. In other states, such as Florida, Ohio, and South Carolina, they've demonstrated that National Board certification has been a proven tool in keeping those excellent educators in the profession, in their school district, in their state where they're at. In South Carolina, they showed that it, National Board certified teachers are 3 times more likely to stay than those without. In addition, this has a compounding effect. The more National Board certified teachers you have, the more great teachers, right, that you have that have gone through this professional development, they then become mentors for other teachers. And sharing that benefit, although I don't necessarily have specifics in terms of how much that might improve, but they end up mentoring especially early career educators, which are often, you know, you talk to any first-year teacher and they're ready to quit at any given moment. Or some days are better than others, but if we can have increased the excellence in teachers with National Board certified, it not only has an impact on their own students, but on their colleagues and the students of their colleagues. Essentially, what rather than having isolated pockets of excellence, it turns into system-wide improvement at the district level or maybe even across the state if we can increase those numbers enough. I'm proud to be invited to testify today to say on behalf of our 12,000 members that NEA Alaska wholeheartedly supports efforts to increase the number of the National Board certified teachers in Alaska. That said, might I be so bold as to suggest something that's not currently in the bill that I would encourage the addition of, and it's been spoken to a little bit already, and that's the creation of a financial incentive program that goes beyond just recognizing teachers who are certified and setting a goal, but helping them achieve that. Earning a National Board certification not only is a grueling process in and of itself, but it costs about $2,000 to apply initial certification. And to the question earlier, it does have to be renewed every 5 years, which requires an additional 50 or 60 hours of additional study in order to do that, and another $500 approximately between the different fees in order to renew each 5 years. NBC is widely accepted credential justifying sort of that incentive based pay, which I know some people are more interested in. And here the numbers I found are a little bit different than what Dr. Parody said, but I found in Washington State and Alabama that incentive that they provided was up to $5,000 annually. And then an additional $5,000 annually for working in a high needs district. I might also mention that this was the approach taken in the 30th Alaska Legislature, Senate Bill 188 at the time, sponsored by Senator Wilkowski had some different numbers than what we're talking about, but that was kind of the approach of that bill as well. In Delaware, it's done a little bit differently. They pay a 12% premium on top of their base salary for those teachers that become National Board certified. And then there's at least 25 other states that offer some kind of financial remuneration for National Board certified teachers who have invested the time, the money, and the dedication required to earn this distinction. Some of them just reimburse for the fees, as I said, all the way up to $5,000 annually. We would certainly support that, we do ourselves as a union support our members in doing this. As I said, it's our jumpstart program that we offer every year. It's kind of an intensive one-week institute that's open to all of our members, and we support them in terms of their application process, helping them because it's so extensive, like guiding them through the process and providing a number of specific member trainings to support them so that they can meet all of the requirements that are expected throughout the process. And so we do that every summer, and we're looking forward to we're right now trying to figure out how to do ours virtually this year, of course. But as Dr. Parity said, there's currently 202 National Board certified teachers right now in Alaska, and 23 more somewhere along in the process that have applied. And it seems like easy math to me when we talk about, again, from ICER, the $20,000 per teacher recruitment and training costs associated with replacing a teacher that leaves, that if we were to provide some kind of incentive annually for them to stay, we'd be way ahead and keeping essentially better teachers here. It would save the state a lot of money, invest in those educators, increase outcomes for Alaska students, rather than paying $20,000 to see our best teachers leave and replace them with who could be a less effective teacher. So anyways, I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk to you about the NBC process and how excellent educators are a critical component to student success, and am available for any questions should there be any. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Claymore, for the testimony. I think question from Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And not so much a question. I'm glad you got into more specifics about some of the incentives we might think about for this particular program. I want to talk to the bill sponsor about whether it was intended to have a zero fiscal note given our circumstances. But the one thing that's troubling me is knowing that, you know, our teachers, it's not a highly paid profession, and you could have really dedicated professionals who would love to participate in this and get the additional certification, but simply are financially, limited because they don't have extra funds themselves. So I'm just wondering, it sounded like incentivizing, one way is an annual salary increase, but you also mentioned some states just, it appears like, cover the cost of this. And so I don't know if you have any thoughts about that. And I know we're pressed for time, so I could even follow up with you separately. It seemed like others might be interested in this information as well. But yeah, I guess I would love to have a situation where we could make sure any educator that was interested would have access, regardless of their own personal financial ability to pay, because it sounds like the state would benefit so much.
Yeah, and I could just put some thoughts on the record. The bill was drafted with just the sort of most modest starting point, just given the budget situation, but I am robustly supportive of every incentive the state could offer for what's the gold standard for excellence in teaching. It seems like it's in our interest that we want, every educator in Alaska to be on a path towards self-improvement and being the best possible force in the classroom for education as possible. And like, just, running the numbers, if we were just to do reimbursement for the fees for National Board certification, it's maybe getting into the cracking $100,000, and I'd like to think that's an incredible return on investment for the state, but would defer to the committee and additional committees beyond this one for what makes sense.
That's Mr. Chairman. is what I was thinking when I ran the numbers, that, you know, if you've only got 23 applicants, perhaps we can afford to support a size, a class of that size. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Other questions from the committee? Representative Kaufman.
I guess in this case, to the chair and the sponsor, when I look at this, I think of kind of the unfunded mandate aspect of it that we just talked about. So, you know, the same considerations about cost, and if it's an actual cost to the state that's just not apparent yet, if it were to be a pass-through cost or incentivization cost. So that's with respect to the absence of a fiscal note. Then the other is if we can get more data around the efficacy of this actual, you know, cause and effect, this really makes a difference. I would be interested in seeing that, if you have any studies that are corrected for, you know, the various economic factors. You know, do higher certified teachers deliver better results because they're in better districts? So is there an actual correlation? Just being a quality manager, data guy, continuous improvement guy, I'd like to see that. It doesn't mean I'm antagonistic to it, but it's just a point of interest.
Noted. Yeah. We'll see what we can come up with and confer with the testifiers as well.
I'm happy to provide the citations for the research I cited. I'm not sure it does everything that you explained in the kind of those parameters in terms of comparing districts and that sort of thing, but we'll double check and see what else we can find. And again, to Representative Tarr through the chair, some districts in Alaska are already doing this, a couple, providing either kind of an annual bonus, none that I know of that are terribly sizable to the extent that we're speaking to here, but it in terms of paying for the program itself, most programs tend to be after the fact, a recognition of that achievement, either through the bonus or a salary premium or a rebate for costs. But it would be interesting to come up with perhaps a way to help assist in the form maybe of loans up front if they can't afford it in the first place, that are then forgiven when they earn that certification. That, I think that would be a novel approach, but I can follow up with you outside the conversation as well.
Thank you. And maybe our last question before we move on to the next bill, Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm so glad that the districts were mentioned. I have consternation with requiring schools, us passing a law that requires the schools to post a sign, because we've talked about this is something that everyone's going to be proud of. But if we're talking about creating an incentive for teachers to become nationally certified, I would like to look to what the districts are already doing, as he mentioned, and find a way that incentivizes the local school districts to be engaged in this process and find a way to be supportive of the teachers that they have, and look for grants, scholarships, and you know, come up with solutions that's not just looking to the state to fill this need, but go to partner with the districts, because that's the local level where the community, the teachers involved with that community, where I think we will have a lot more solutions and engagement about how this can be done, so that it achieves two goals. It's getting the it's showing that this is a goal of the legislature, that this is important to the community, bringing attention to the national certification, but engaging the districts where they are and highlighting some of them may not have it on their radar that this is something that they should be striving for, while others are already doing it. Let's look at what the others are doing and see if that can be a model or be improved upon.
Representative Vance, I might just ask if Lisa Parity or Norm Wooten, both of whom represent organizations that represent the districts that you're talking about, might have any comment to your comment. And if not, I'm happy to offer some thoughts. But Mr. Wooten, Ms. Parity, any sort of from the district perspective to Representative Vance's question?
through the chair, Representative Vance, I was deferring to Norm, so please, Mr. Wooten, jump in if you want to. I think, you know, I too am always supportive of whatever you can do at the local level and kind of that local control focus on doing programs and initiatives that best support the school district. So I absolutely think pursuing grants and opportunities is a good idea. And we have done that to really focus on some rural schools. If our cohort is successful, if we're able to bring 20 people through the process, that might be something to support other districts through grant work to do. But having said that, So I agree with you, Representative Vance, but having said that, I think, you know, there's a lot of states that recognize that this gold star for teaching is so incredibly rigorous that it's worth investing in and supporting those teachers to obtain it, because we know that the long-term results do produce increased student achievement. So I think it's worth trying to come at this from multiple angles, which includes whatever we can do at the local level to incent and support our teachers, but also very encouraged to hear conversation about potentially having some kind of incentive available to teachers to support them through the process, because it's an intensive process and an expensive process while they're already working, as well as maybe incentive once they've completed it. So I think both pathways are important.
Thank you, Dr. Parody, for those comments. And I think with that, we'll put a pause on testimony, although I do, public testimony was noticed today, and I see no one online, so I'm just going to open it and, seeing no one, close it to go through, make sure that has been touched on, and we'll take up House Bill 18 next Tuesday. I'm going to set a 3 p.m. Monday amendment deadline, and we'll also communicate that by email to all members. And again, feel free to communicate with me. Very amenable for us developing or iterating this bill as members see fit. Pretty much the entirety of the education community believes this is an important credential to uplift and support, and so really excited to see what we can do to further what the education community has invested a lot in putting forward. So that'll take us to the next bill on today's agenda, House Bill 62, relating to marriage witnesses, from Representative Clayman, and Sophie Jonas will help present the bill. Welcome, both of you, and I know there's a video presentation that we'll get to in just a little bit, but before we get there, any introductory comments or presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the House State Affairs Committee, thank you for hearing House Bill 62. This bill, which we heard in the last session, would eliminate the two-witness requirement at marriage ceremonies. At present, during the solemnization of marriage, couples must assent to the marriage in the presence of each other, the person solemnizing the marriage, and at least two additional witnesses. Afterward, all parties must sign the marriage certificates. House Bill 62 would eliminate the requirement of any additional witnesses at the marriage solemnization and the signatures of these witnesses on marriage certificates in order to help support Alaska's destination wedding industry while preserving the integrity of marriage solemnizations. Alaska is one of only 20 states that require two wedding witnesses. 24 states in the District of Columbia do not require wedding witnesses at all. Wedding witnesses played a more critical role in past centuries when record keeping was less automated. In England, prior to the 18th century, the legal requirements of marriage were governed by the canon law of the Church of England. A marriage was considered valid as long as the union was consented to by both parties and celebrated by an Anglican clergyman. This largely informal process that dictated the validity of marriages allowed for the proliferation of clandestine marriages. In the 1700s, a woman laid claim to the recently deceased Captain John Campbell's pension on the basis that she married him in a clandestine ceremony. The problem arose because another woman claimed she too was the wife of the captain. The confusion that ensued from inability to verify marriage claims led Parliament to pass the Act for Better preventing of clandestine marriage, known as the Marriage Act of 1753. The act formalized the marriage process, requiring the marriage be viewed by witnesses who could later be called on to confirm that the marriage did or did not take place, an extra precaution of record keeping should records of marriages be damaged or go missing. The Marriage Act is the historical basis for the two-witness requirement. Today, however, the role of wedding witnesses is purely ceremonial. In Alaska, while the person solemnizing the marriage must meet certain criteria, the law does not require any form of witness verification. Destination weddings are a growing business in Alaska, especially as couples opt for small, intimate ceremonies rather than large ones due to risks associated with COVID-19. But the requirement of two wedding witnesses makes Alaska a less attractive location for destination weddings and burdens wedding industry professionals who are often tasked with asking friends or family to witness the weddings of their out-of-town clients. And finding witnesses for out-of-town clients has proven to be especially hard during the COVID-19 pandemic. The two-witness requirement can also place increased financial strain on couples seeking to do destination weddings, as they must pay the cost of transporting their witnesses to the wedding location. Destination weddings bring in an estimated $1 million in revenue to Alaska each year. This revenue figure doesn't consider the fact that more than 90% of out-of-state couples who come to Alaska to get married end up staying for days or weeks to explore our great state. House Bill 62 will help Alaska's tourism industry by allowing Alaska to compete more directly with states like Florida and Hawaii, which lead the nation in destination weddings. I will now have my staff, Sophie Jonas, present a sectional analysis of the bill.
Good afternoon, members of the House State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Sophie Jonas, and I'm staff to Representative Clayman. So Section 1 of the bill amends AS 25.05.301 by eliminating the requirement of two witnesses at marriage solemnization ceremonies. Section 2 amends AS 25.05.321 by eliminating the requirement of the signatures of two witnesses on marriage certificates. Section 3 removes language from AS 25.05.361 to conform with changes made in Section 1. And finally, Section 4 repeals subsections A3 and A5 of AS 25.05.041 to conform with changes made in Section 1. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to present. We have a short testimonial video that we will be showing, as well as invited testimony. We ask committee members to hold their questions until invited testimony. Thank you.
Last year, hi, my name is Hannah Jacob. Last year, we had to make the difficult decision of canceling our traditional wedding with our friends and family up in Alaska. Given that I'm born and raised in Alaska, it was always my dream to have an Alaska wedding.
On July 11th, we moved up early and we met a show, and it had to pass replay and fail it. We hiked for 3 hours in the rain until we found 30 spots between upper and lower replays. As everything we imagined our wedding would be, the rain turned out to be a blessing. We were largely alone in an amphitheater mountain.
Finding witnesses to sign our marriage license in such a remote and beautiful area was the only complicating factor we came across. It would have been one less thing to worry about if it wasn't a requirement.
Removing this requirement would reduce the stress on other couples and allow them to have a worry-free backcountry elopement on the last thing
to offer. Hello, my name is Brett. This is my wife, Anna. And in 2020, we took a trip to the Chugach State Forest to elope and provide a bright spot in our otherwise tumultuous year of 2020.
Since we were coming from New York City, we didn't know anyone in Alaska, and since we were eloping, we weren't bringing anyone. For my sake, and so we ran into a little bit of an issue pretty early on in the wedding planning process, trying to find two people who could sign our marriage license. Eventually, we did find two people who worked at the helicopter company, and we were able to get them to sign our license. It was a little bit less than ideal because we didn't really know them, and as well, we did have to have our wedding ceremony in the helicopter company's office instead of on the beautiful beaches that we had come to see.
We really enjoyed our time in Alaska, and we really want our couples to experience the the opportunity to get married in that great state. And of course, it would always be better if you could get married on the glacier as opposed to in the helicopter office. We had a wonderful time, and we very much look forward to coming back in the future. So thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Wojciech. I am here in my home city of Mexico with my good friend Amali here, who was named to honor and mark the occasion that my wife and I just shared in this place in the beautiful state of Alaska, which we did travel there and with Joe and Chigash Peace Photography. It was truly an unbelievable experience. And I really think that the only detractor from it really was to step kind of out of the intimacy and fluidity of that entire experience to enter in a bit of a more bureaucratic mode and sort of dot I's and cross T's to establish our witnesses and satisfy that requirement of your state. I think that if that could be remedied, it's well worth consideration so that others like ourselves would be more willing maybe to have experience the way to travel to your state and hopefully witness and experience the wonders like Colony Glacier and flying out of her wood and everything that you have to offer. So thank you for your time and consideration. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Jonas, and maybe would we be able to get the lights back on? But given that, I think concludes the presentation of the bill. Any questions from the committee for the sponsors on House Bill 62? Excellent video, I might say. I remember we heard this bill 2 years ago. I thought it was great legislation, and nothing has changed from my perspective, but there might be other perspectives. Representative Kaufman.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess to the room, I guess I started thinking of the coronavirus impacts and Zoom meetings, and I started wondering, are we going to have Zoom weddings, or are they already a thing? They're already a thing? Okay. I'm not up on modern wedding practice. So I guess, does this have any effect on that? Is
Representative Klayman?
Through the chair, Representative Kaufman, observing weddings by Zoom, my sister sent me pictures of a wedding she had watched by Zoom, and that doesn't really affect, this bill doesn't affect that at all. The issue of the witness requirement, I'm not sure could be satisfied by a Zoom witness. I think you'd still have to have a person physically present to meet their witness requirement, and that goes back to the question of why are we still following a 1700s era law of England when the state wasn't keeping records and the church was keeping records. I think it's there's definitely people attending weddings by Zoom, but I don't think that this bill has any impact on that.
Through the chair, thank you. Yeah, you start looking at some of this legislation, you know, and you start picturing, you know, where else could it go? And I thought that was it was an interesting question for me at least, so thank you.
And actually, I'm just taking note there. So we do have some invited testifiers online, and I think we'll try to get to at least one today. So Kayan Mulhern with Celtic Ministries in Wasilla. If you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony. I'm going to ask if it's possible to keep it in 2 or less minutes, just given that we have a committee coming up in a little bit here.
And Mr. Chair, I'm going to duck out for the 2 minutes while he's testifying. And be right
back. Okay. Thank you, Representative Kamen.
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Please proceed.
Good. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, distinguished representatives. My name is Reverend Kean Mulhern. I'm an ordained minister. I'm from Wasilla, and I represent Celtic Ministries. I've been a minister for 21 years now, traveled to many weddings, and performed weddings in other states where no witnesses were required. This is a big problem up here in Alaska. Most of my clientele, over 90%, actually come from other parts of the world other than the lower 48. So they're not usually traveling with people, and they don't know people up here. It also happens even with new and young military people on JBEAR. They have not yet gotten friends and known a lot of people on base and everything like that, so they're also calling and asking for witnesses. This is also a problem when trying to go on base, so we have to do them off base. But most of all, these couples that are having to have witnesses come in that they don't even know, they then start to feel uneasy when they start doing vows and things like that. It's not like asking family there or anything like that, and they don't have the family to be there. Many of these people have just moved to Alaska for one reason or another, and like I said, don't even know their neighbors or anything like that. The witnesses are not being used to verify who the couple are or check IDs. In fact, the Bureau of Vital Statistics does that when the couple applies for the marriage license. The witnesses are also not called on to verify that the wedding took place or that it was performed in the proper manner. That would be one thing, but there's no way to even do those kind of things with the witnesses, just signature and address, and people move all the time. There's no way to keep up with them. I think House Bill 52 is a very smart thing for the wedding industry in Alaska. And if you would like me to answer the questions about Zoom weddings, I can.
Reverend Mulhern, if you could, please offer any perspective there. And then I think we can call it a day and bring this legislation up again at the next meeting. So please proceed on the subject of Zoom weddings.
Okay. So as of right now, once COVID took place, before COVID times, there were no states that allowed a Zoom wedding. There are two states now, New York being one of them, that allows people to actually get married via Zoom because of COVID. It was just supposed to take this, like a stopgap time of this up. I don't think it's going to be something that people are going to be doing for a long time, and it has really nothing to do so much with the witnesses. But as that particular question was asked, no, you could not perform a wedding on Zoom because the witnesses do have to be present at the time of the wedding.
Thank you very much for that testimony and that answer. And this time we'll hold House Bill 62.
You don't want to hear the other witness?
I think we're out of time, unfortunately. Yeah, but absolutely do at the next hearing. So we'll notify members in terms of hearing this bill next week, and as well as a possible amendment deadline. But thank you, Sophia and House Records and Tom with LIO for facilitating today. And we'll be back next Tuesday, March 9th at 3:00. Thank you all very much. We're adjourned.